It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard. I am traveling this week, so joining me on the other line, back in Los Angeles, is Billboard.com senior editor Katie Atkinson. Hello, Katie.
Hi, Keith. How are you?
I am fine. How are you doing?
Doing well, though I'm moving, and it's the worst ever, and I'm never going to move again.
But the great thing is you don't sound sick anymore, so there is a silver lining.
That's true. I've regained my health just in order to be a workhorse for this move instead. So it's just a trade-off.
Well, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop and about Katie's move on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the week's big pop news, fun chart stats and stories, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. This week on the show, we've got a super fun interview with the singer-songwriter Betty Hu, who just released her new album, The Valley. See what we did there? Plus, we've got chart news on Drake, Chuck Berry, and Depeche Mode, and a bevy of One Direction-related news updates about Harry Styles, Liam Payne, and Zayn. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you won't miss an episode, and give us a rating or review while you're at it. If you have any questions for us, feel free to tweet us at Keith_Caulfield or KT Atkinson. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit iTunes.com/Billboard Podcasts. Let's jump right into it, and I think we've got a bevy of 1D-related news updates from Katie. I see a trend forming. I'm sure you were probably thrilled to like connect all three of these together into one, just One Direction, you know, frenzy today.
Yeah, I mean, why merge them into a single One Direction item when we could just have an all One Direction edition of the Billboard.com headlines? I think that's the way to
Absolutely.
Do it.
Absolutely.
So let's launch right into it. Arguably the biggest music-related news of the three items, Harry Styles has finally teased his solo music, and his debut single, Billboard can confirm, is out on April 7th. So several months ago, Billboard broke the news that Harry signed a solo recording contract with Columbia Records, and we've been waiting for music ever since. Well, it appears the time has almost come. On Saturday, a somewhat cryptic ad, actually very cryptic ad, aired on TV in the UK featuring Harry and promoting the date April 7. There is some music played in the ad, but we don't know if it's a taste of his new song or if it's just, you know, some background music for the commercial. Keith, are you ready for some solo Harry?
Sure. Who isn't? I'm curious. Do we know that it's definitely? I mean, Billboard. You say Billboard confirms that it's going to be a single, so we know it's a single, not like a surprise album.
Yes, we confirmed that April 7 means the debut solo single of Harry Styles.
Wow. No, I'm ready for it. I mean, so far, you know, we've been blessed with sort of quality One Direction material in terms of the proper singles that have come out, you know, with Niall's solo debut and certainly, you know, former 1D member Zayn and his output. So I'm looking forward to what Harry's going to drop on us. And I'll be really interested to see, like, sonically where he goes because, you know, I just don't know what his sound is necessarily going to be. Do you have any wild guesses, Katie, about what it might sound like?
I mean, I kind of hope he goes in a rock direction. I feel like Zayn's kind of got the R&B tied up, and Niall's got kind of the Ed Sheeran singer-songwriter-y thing going. And I think that Harry could, you know, be the rock star of the group. I mean, I think he was the rock star of the group. So that's kind of the direction I hope he goes in.
Well, we have more One Direction news. That's right, this week, Katie. What else is going on in the world of 1D?
Next up, Liam Payne is a dad. Would you have guessed a couple of years ago that two-fifths of One Direction would be dads by 2017? Well, here we are. Liam Payne and his girlfriend, pop star and X Factor judge Cheryl, welcomed a baby boy on Saturday. No name has been announced yet, and the new addition to the One Direction family comes just over a year after Louis Tomlinson's little guy Freddie was born. Liam announced the news via Instagram with a sweet photo of him embracing his son and this message: "My close friends and family know there are very few times when I'm left speechless. Wow, I'm incredibly happy to welcome our new baby boy into the world. It's a moment that I will never forget for the rest of my life and my favorite memory I have so far. I'm completely in awe of his incredible mother and how she has been the whole way through this. She's really made my dreams come true. We haven't named him yet, but he's already capturing hearts, including mine. I feel very blessed. Happy Mother's Day, everyone." And, you know, Keith could probably tell us this since he's hanging out in the UK right now, but Sunday was Mother's Day in the UK, so he was able to thank Cheryl a day early for his new baby boy.
Interestingly enough, he didn't actually mention the word Cheryl anywhere in that Instagram post, even though we assume that is, you know, Cheryl is the mother.
Wouldn't that be amazing if she just coincidentally were pregnant around the same time and he just had a baby with somebody else and like all together? I mean, yeah, that's not the case.
Yeah. No, we're assuming it's not the case. No, you know, no. Keep going.
No, it's all good. I mean, to round out 1D's big week, we also got a new single from Zayn. The former member released his latest single on Thursday. It's called Still Got Time, and it's featuring Party Next Door. This is the first taste of Zayn's next album, which is the follow-up to his solo debut, Mind of Mine. And it has a very current, very Drake-y trap house, or maybe trap pop, vibe. The song should probably debut on the Billboard Hot 100 next week, by the way. Keith, do you think it will give Zayn his second number one?
Well, I don't know. Anything is possible. It's going to be kind of hard to top Ed Sheeran, who is currently number one on the Hot 100. But, I mean, Zayn did do it with Pillow Talk, so we shall see. And, of course, stay tuned to Billboard.com as we follow the song throughout the week and see if it's going to build towards a spectacular debut next week on the charts. Speaking of charts, coincidentally, it's like we wrote that or something. So let's run the Billboard chart numbers and do the chart chat. Number one this week, out of our top three things to know about the charts, or at least the top three things that we think you should know about the charts. Number one, it's all about Drake. His More Life album debuts at number one on the Billboard 200 albums chart. And he also sets two new records on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. First up, on the Billboard 200, More Life debuts at number one, giving Drake his seventh number one album, and it sets a new streaming record. The album starts with 505,000 equivalent album units earned in the week ending March 23rd, according to Nielsen Music. That's actually the biggest week for any album since Drake's own Views launched at number one with a little over a million units last May. Now, of More Life's starting unit figure, a record 257,000 units were driven by streaming equivalent album units. And when we do the math, where we take 257,000 units times 1,500, which is one streaming album unit equals 1,500 streams of songs from an album, there's lots of math here, that equates to 384.8 million streams of the songs from More Life during the tracking week. And that's a record. No album has ever done that before. And, you know, we shouldn't be too terribly surprised considering he premiered this album on his OVO Sound radio show. And it was very focused as a sort of playlist slash album type project. So this makes sense that it had such a huge debut. So kudos to Drake for having a blockbuster week on the Billboard 200. But the Drake excitement doesn't stop there, because on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, all 22 tracks from More Life debut on the Hot 100, which gives Drake a total of 24 songs on the chart. He already had two songs already on the list. So he actually breaks his own record for the most simultaneously charting songs on the chart. The Hot 100 is 100 positions. He has 24. He practically has a quarter of the chart, which is kind of crazy to think about. It's just, Drake, give someone else a shot, dude. And even better, he now has 154 songs that he's charted with on the Hot 100. That now is the record for the most hits that a solo artist has ever charted on the Hot 100. He passes Lil Wayne, actually, this week with that additional 22 songs that pushes him ahead of Lil Wayne. So kudos to Drake all around for hitting so many amazing chart feats this week on the Billboard charts.
I have a feeling... I have a feeling that Drake is not going to publicly celebrate beating Lil Wayne quite as much as Nicki Minaj publicly celebrated beating Aretha Franklin, since it's his friend and his mentor and his label boss. Just a thought.
Yes. That is probably a very wise decision. But it will not mean that Billboard will not be celebrating it on his behalf. And knowing Lil Wayne's output, he'll probably, you know, get another like 20 hits in the next couple years anyway. So we shall see. Things are good in the Young Money family in the past few weeks, between Nicki's beating of Aretha and Drake hitting a new high on the Hot 100. Speaking of the Hot 100, as I mentioned earlier, Shape of You by Ed Sheeran is still number one, by a good long country mile ahead of number two. So we're not quite sure how long Ed will be at number one, but it seems like he could be sitting there for a while. Elsewhere on the charts, on the Billboard 200, Chuck Berry is back in the top 40 of the chart for the first time in more than 40 years. He ranks in the top 40 at number 33 as his definitive collection, Greatest Hits album, debuts on the list. That is the first time that he's been in the top 40 since 1972, and it's his highest charting album since that same year, when the London Chuck Berry Sessions, which includes his number one Hot 100 hit, My Ding-a-ling, when that album spent 20 weeks in the top 40, and it peaked at number 8 on the October 28th, 1972 chart. Happy, and it's great to see Chuck Berry back in the top 40. Unfortunately, it's under sad circumstances, but, you know, we're happy to see him back on the charts and certainly back in the top 40. Third chart news item this week, let's get into the spirit with Depeche Mode. Heyo! Depeche Mode's new album is called Spirit, so see, never mind. The veteran alternative acts debuts at number 5 on the Billboard 200 chart this week with its new album, Spirit, granting the group its 8th top 10 effort. And, fun fact, the debut comes nearly 36 years after the act made its Billboard chart debut. Depeche Mode arrived on Billboard's charts way back on the April 4th, 1981 dated Dance Club Songs chart, when Dreaming of Me arrived on the tally. And of course, then, you know, since then, Depeche Mode has had an amazing career on Billboard's charts. And I'm just thrilled to see them back on the charts this week and with a top 5 album on the Billboard 200. So there you go. There are 3 of the biggest chart news items this week on the charts, from Drake to Chuck Berry to Depeche Mode and a dash of Ed Sheeran thrown in. Katie, do you have any burning questions about anything that I just said?
Well, you definitely gave us a lot of information there. I was kind of wondering, when you did the math on Drake's More Life streams equaling 384.8 million, what the previous, how much did he beat himself by, basically, with this record?
Good question. I will tell you that in just one second as I stall and look up the number myself online. Heyo, that's funny. He beat his own record with Views, which launched with 163,000 streaming equivalent units, which equaled 245 million streams of the songs from Views during its debut week. So,
whoa,
a pretty robust gap between the two albums. Yes, yeah.
Wow, that's a pretty huge. Yeah, that's a huge margin.
It also helps that, you know, there's 22 tracks on Drake's new album, and he kind of maximized the potential of the set. But, I mean, you know, this isn't terribly out of the ordinary, and it just sort of tells us where the consumption of albums are going, I suppose, as we've known for a while, but we just see it proven in sort of robust ways with the arrival of More Life at number one. I'm assuming More Life will probably be number one again next week, unless some surprise album bumps it out of the way. We should probably see Drake at number one for a little bit of time. I don't know if it'll be as long as Views was last year, but, you know, we shall see.
Yeah, this whole streaming thing seems to really be sticking around.
It's catching on or something. I don't know. It seems to be popular. Well, okay, let's move on from the music news and the chart news to our guest interview this week with Betty Hu. She stopped by the office a few weeks ago, and she was just delightful. I know we say that word all the time, but really it was just a fun conversation. You just felt like you were talking to, like, someone that you've known for a while and that you wanted to, like, hang out with. She's just lovely. In our chat, she talks about her just released new album, which is called The Valley, came out last Friday. And she talks about how in the world she got Warren G on the record, which is crazy. And she talked about some of the process behind making some of the songs on the album. And she also talked about how she's a pop music nerd, her love of Britney Spears, Beyonce, J-Lo, and Rihanna, and how she got Superfruit, which is 2/5 of Pentatonix, on her album, and so much more. So take a listen to our conversation with the fabulous Betty Hu. Welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast, Betty Hu.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am fabulous now that you're here.
Oh my God, stop it.
Stop the love-in. Well, you are here to talk about your new album, The Valley.
Yes.
Which is out on March 24th.
Oh my gosh.
And it comes after you've previously scored 3 number ones on Billboard's Dance Club Songs chart.
Sure.
Hopefully you knew that.
I did. I sort of do.
You
sometimes.
Sort of do. Someone's told you.
Yeah, sure.
And one each in the last 3 years, by the way. 2016, 15, and 14,
I believe. Gosh, really?
Yeah, I think one in each year.
No pressure. I really have to get it together this year.
Yeah, pull it together. Get the promo team together.
Come on, kids.
So because we're Billboard, and because we're all about the charts,
obviously,
before we get into the album, I want to know, when you had your first number one with Somebody Loves You, which was a viral hit turned chart hit.
Sure.
Do you remember finding out about how you were number one on the Billboard charts? Do you remember that feeling or... No.
I do remember. I was living in New York, and I got an email because you find out, like, before it's live, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like a couple days behind or something.
We tip you off like a day or two before. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I remember getting an email from my manager being like, "Don't post anywhere yet.
Yeah.
Don't tell anyone, Betty, yet." But on Thursday or whatever day it was, it's like, if you go to Billboard Dance, like, you'll see that, like, you got number one. And I remember being like, I don't even really know what that means or how to feel or react or be excited about it. I just remember knowing that it was important and kind of being so overwhelmed by, like, joy and also, like, confusion as to how I ended up doing what I'm doing with my life, that I was like, here we are. It's always kind of, I'm always very, very grateful and try not to take anything for granted. So it was a very exciting moment for all of us.
Has someone explained to you at some point what that number one meant and, like, how it worked yet? Has someone actually told you what these number ones mean? Because I can. We're here. I work in the charts.
Oh, my God. Do you want to?
It's this particular chart that you've been number one on is based on reports from DJs that play in clubs in America. So there's, like, more than 100 people on this panel.
Right.
They report to us each week. They say, here's my most played records. Here's the ones I've added. Here's the ones I've dropped.
Oh,
and so we take these reports each week, smush them all together, and then we find out, you know, according to these DJs, these are the most popular songs being played in clubs.
You know what? Someone has explained it to me, but never that succinctly or, like, made it that much sense to me. So You're hired. Now you have to follow me around and explain everything in my life to me.
This is why I work at Billboard.
Yeah, exactly. So
if you ever have a charts question, just call us up.
Fabulous. Cool. Okay, great. Thanks. Yeah.
So with The Valley, what has kind of been your album making process so far? Is it one of those things where you are writing and then kind of getting in the studio, or are you getting with producers and finding songs, or what's the process?
Gosh, this process is very large term. I think there has been a lot of kind of just feeling it out for a long time. So I always kind of like to start writing with music and harmony. And I think it's always, I can write like with a guitar and do that on my own, but I kind of don't trust myself anymore as much as I think, especially when you do sort of the kind of music that I do, it's a lot of co-writing. Mm. And so I've done a lot of co-writing on this record. I spent about a year and a half going in with different people, kind of doing like speed dating of songwriters and producers, which I'm so glad I did, because I think I found a group of producers and people who really get me, which is where this record came from. And I was lucky enough to work with people that I've admired and like loved the music of for so long too, because I'm such a like pop music nerd also, that for me I'm like, you guys did this song in like 2002 that was like a deep cut on this record, and they're like, who are you? And I'm like, that's my favorite song in the world. Yeah. And they're like, you're the weirdest person ever. So that stuff to me was kind of the coolest part about it. But it was a lot of testing the waters kind of emotionally and sonically, and trying to figure out where I wanted to be and the kind of artist I wanted to portray myself as and the music I wanted to put out. You know, there were very specific choices made and directions taken, you know, with thought and a lot of care and time, because I wanted it to be a honest reflection of where I'm at right now as just like a human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. You know, it's all I've ever tried. Ever anybody's trying to do, I think, probably.
You were one of those like younger people, I don't know what time, when you're looking at those
kids,
albums.
I see you're like, do the young, what are they called? The little people.
the small things.
Yeah.
when you meet, like, you know, obviously we know big producers like Max Martin or whoever. But, you know, you may have been pouring through your favorite, I don't know, Spice Girls album or whatever, saying, you did this eight, mm-hmm. track eight.
No, literally. All like I didn't realize until kind of the last year, like how much of a nerd I was about pop music. Until
it's a good thing.
Yeah, probably. Because I was obsessed with tour DVDs when I was a kid, which is like a very weird thing.
It's very niche.
It is very niche. It's not like I'm obsessed with Britney Spears and I just like have all her albums. It's like, no, like the Britney Spears Live in Las Vegas, like 2001 DVD with the cover with her and the Elvis.
Isn't that the one where there's like rain on her too?
With the see-through cowboy hat?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I've literally seen that DVD probably 100 times. I like burned a hole through it. Same with Beyonce. I Am live tour. Watched it last night. No joke. Like, and I'm thinking, and I'm looking back at my life and I remember as a young person and as an early teenager only wanting to watch like massive tours of pop and R&B artists. And now I'm like, oh, I was like training myself for this thing that I wanted to do. But at the time I had no idea. Yeah. And so now I talk about it and it's funny. I kind of have like, to me, it's a definer of if like, you're my soulmate or not is immediately. So I was with on one of the songs on the album, Superfruit is gonna feature on it.
Really?
Right. Yes, we just recorded it. We just got the mix back and it sounds amazing.
Well, I mean, when you have 2/5 of Pentatonix, which is Superfruit,
yes,
and they can sing like the daylights.
My producer on the song is also my roommate. And he was, Zach Waters' pretty sister is the producer of a bunch of songs on my record. Okay. And so he and I wrote the song together and we were like, we have to get Superfruit out, whatever. When it comes to fruition, he's having
fruition.
Them sing it. Fruition.
Super fruition.
Exactly. Oh, it's good. It's really good. When it happened, he was like, he had Scott and Mitch sing for about 10 seconds and he was like, cool, sounds good. And then I had to re-record something and he had me do it like 75 times. And I was like, all right, do you know how like hard this is for me to like deal with? The fact that you're going to have Scott and Mitch sing through it like twice and be like, I think we got it. And then I have to sing 4 seconds of the song and you're like, one more time. I'm like, okay, all right. Like at least pretend that I sound good for now. But when Scott came over to record it, he and I were talking about the I Am World Tour, the Beyonce. Scott and Mitch both. And I was like, he was like, have you seen I Am? I was like, have I seen I Am? And then he and I at the exact same time start singing the intro to the show, because she does like an a cappella intro of Deja Vu, and she's silhouetted, and she just poses in the silhouette and lets the fans scream for her, which, by the way, is like the most badass thing I've ever heard or seen in my entire life. So she and me and Scott both go at the same time and go, "Baby, gal, seem like a," and we do all of the same riffs and everything. I'm like, "Oh, you were literally my person. You're my person." The fact that we also look like brother and sister is like a very strange coincidence. I have a theory that he and I were lovers in another life.
Oh.
But
that could be a song.
Yeah, really.
That'll be the next Super Fruit.
The next Super Fruit feature.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I actually listened to a sampler. We listened to a sampler of the album, and that song was not on it yet because obviously you just got that.
Because it just got finished.
Fresh out of the Super Fruit oven.
Yeah.
One of those number ones that I mentioned earlier was actually a cover of Donna Lewis's "I Love You Always Forever," mm-hmm. which I believe is going to be on the album.
Yes, it is. Correct? Last song on the album.
I'm assuming you probably told this story before. Have you heard from Donna Lewis at some point?
Oh my God. Donna and I tweet.
But you're besties.
Donna and I are basically best friends. I am completely obsessed with Donna Lewis. There's so much. I think for a song like that, it was so important to me. And so to do it my own way, and I did kind of, it's not completely different, and it really, I tried to capture the essence of what made me love that song initially, because it's like, don't fix it if it's not broken.
Right.
I remember when we sat down to produce it, I was like, we were like, should we change the chords? And I was like, no, it's so good. We don't need to do really anything except for just make it us. And so doing that, I think Donna could have been one of two ways. She could have been like, who is this girl? Why is she singing my song this way? Like, she's blasphemed my whole life. But instead she was like, this is so cool and you did it justice, and was like tweeting me and like supporting it and sending it out on her Twitter. And I was like, Donna, you're the best. So she's been very lovely and supportive, and I'm really like so grateful for kind of her, like the grace that she has shown, allowing me to sing and perform the song that I have loved my whole life. And there are so few songs, I think, also in my life that I wish that I could perform. Like, "I'm Gonna Get You Good" by Shania Twain is another one of those. Like, wish I'd written that song, wish it was mine, like, crazy. And so "I Love You Always Forever" is top of that list. And every night I perform it, it's one of my favorite songs to perform now. And it's not mine, and it's the only song that I do that's not mine. So I think that makes it's really special to me.
Well, and let's talk about some of the other songs on the new album.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe I'm doing it. I've been talking about making this record for so long. And, like, this is the first, like, real interview I've talked about the actual songs on the record. And I don't even know how to feel.
And we've
right
actually
now.
Heard some of them, too. Really, so we can talk about it. Well, "Some Kind of Wonderful" is your current single.
Yes.
And it's total just pure pop and fun.
Smash you in the face. Yeah.
Yes. And your vocals are kind of, like, distorted. Yeah. It's just got such a cool sound in general. So how did that all come together?
I had 4 days with Papa Noak, and we did a song a day. We had finished the song for the day, and we were kind of sitting and talking about my project and sort of how I felt and where I was and my concerns and the things I was excited about, and we were listening to music, and I remember telling them, like, I just want to have a song that is so easily accessible and so big and makes people feel something so much, mm-hmm. that it's sort of undeniable in that way. And I think we were talking about "Walking on Sunshine" by Katrina and the Waves, mm-hmm. and how that actually is a really big inspiration for this song, because the chorus is, it's about a romance. It's like, I used to think maybe you love me, but now I know that it's true. But then the chorus is just, "I'm walking on sunshine and don't it feel good?" It's not about that. Uh-huh. It's not about the love. And so I did that also. That was kind of inspired for "Some Kind of Wonderful." And the verses, it's like, I've been thinking we're meant to be. Like, yeah, it's a love song, but then the chorus is for everybody. It's "Feeling Tonight, Some Kind of Wonderful." That's all it is. And I remember I came in the next day after we had this whole conversation, and the next morning I went in and they had gotten there early, because every other day I think I had been there before them, and I got there and they had already been working for like 3 hours, and they were like, "We've got a track that we want to play you, and we think it's kind of crazy and you might hate it, but if you like it, it'd be so tight." And they played it for me, and I was like, this is the craziest thing I have ever heard. And he was like, "What are you going to do over that verse?" I was like, "Yell, I guess. What else am I supposed to do? It's so crazy and out. Like, I don't know what else to do, so I'm just going to yell." And I think we wrote it in like an hour and a half.
Because
like at that point, it was so like already almost finished. I was like, I know exactly what we're doing. It was so much fun.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Another track on the album, "You Can Cry Tomorrow." I love it. It has this great like synthy intro. And then it, like, that synthy part like kind of weaves throughout the rest of the song. And it has like this very like sleek, like kind of, to me, it reminds me of, like, has this, like, 80s vibe, but it's not 80s, quote-unquote.
Sure.
And your vocals have this, like, really cool, dreamy quality to them, and you hit these, like, sort of high falsetto-y parts.
Yeah.
I just love the song.
Oh, my God, thank
And I just
you.
Want you to tell me all about it.
Oh,
and,
my gosh. Like, I can tell you anything you want to
how
know about
How it came to fruition. We'll keep saying that
yeah,
word.
Yeah, super fruition. That song is actually the only song on the record that is about a girlfriend of mine. She always gets mad at me because I, like, drag her in interviews all the time. I'm like, no, I'm not dragging you. Everyone knows you have horrible taste in men. It's, like, not my fault that I'm telling the truth.
I can't help it that you're
yeah,
inspiring
exactly.
me.
So she, because basically she is, it's not her horrible taste in men. It's just that she is literally a goddess, like, queen, deserves the world. And she keeps happen. And I think everybody, I've done this for years of my life, finding yourself in positions where you're with somebody who does not appreciate that about you. And it's really hard to watch from the outside because you're going, well, you stop it because these guys don't understand how perfect and beautiful and, like, important you are. And this song is basically about how sometimes she lets people define how she feels about herself. And it makes me incensed because I think she's so wonderful. And that, so this song came out of basically not only her, but all my girlfriends who I think so many of them, like, don't know their worth. And how spectacular they are. And so this song is about me kind of trying to be like, do you understand that, one, I'm going to get you so drunk. Two, stop feeling sorry for yourself because that guy is trash and you were a queen. And three, like, this is what friends are for. And, like, this is all you need to know about. This is the most important part of your life, or the people that love you for all that you are. And so I went in with Peter and Zach. And we wrote over, Oliver had this track already. We were in the studio. And we were kind of messing around with some stuff. We started a couple things from scratch. And we were like, oh, I don't really know what we want to do yet. And we got this track from Oliver. And we hear it. It's, we have, like, 6 or 7 tracks from Oliver. And they're so crazy that we, like, all of these tracks are just tracks that they've been, like, laying around. They're like, oh, whatever. Like, they're fine. And they're, like, incredible. Like, oh, every single one of them were like, these are all so good. But we heard this one. And immediately we were all like, this is what we're writing to. And I remember we got to the bridge part of that song is probably my favorite part of my entire album.
Wow.
I think it's heavy, heavy. That part of that song is, like, the pinnacle of my entire record. I was like, I'll never be better than this moment. It's my Donna Summer, like disco moment. I can't, it's one of my favorite songs, and it's one of the instant grats on the record. So it's coming out, like, March 3rd.
Nice.
It's
well,
the next one to be released.
Well, then when people actually hear this interview, they could probably already own the track.
I hope so. Oh my gosh.
Let's try to encourage people to go pre-order the album.
So another one that we got to hear was the Bouncy Free to Fly.
Yes.
Which features Warren G. So how did that happen?
How in the world did Warren G get on your album?
Honestly, it's like, I feel like I've never been cooler than I am when I'm, like, associated with Warren G. The track is super West Coast influenced,
yeah.
And a lot of the record is sort of about the last year and a half of my life, moving to LA, the kind of transition of my life, I think, if I may, between girl and woman. I think,
to quote Britney
yeah,
Spears.
Exactly. Not, I am not yet a girl, not yet a woman. Which, by the way, like, totally does not get enough credit for being, like, an incredibly written song. So, like, just put a pin in that. But I think that Free to Fly is one of the songs that, to me, is, like, the embodiment of finding a love for LA, because I really loved New York for so long, and I think that really influenced my music. You know, I talk about it all the time in my songs. And so moving to LA, I was like, what else? I have to write about something else. And so I think Free to Fly is super, like, oh, I moved to LA and I'm happy now.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about letting go of a relationship and letting go of somebody who you are better off without. And it should be as easy as that. And did you hear the Warren G rap?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I literally am obsessed with him, and we got it in. And I heard it, and I was like, this is probably the coolest thing that's ever happened to me, like, to be honest.
You moved to LA, and you have to get Warren G on a song, obviously.
Well, because we wrote it, and we were like, there has to be a feature on it, and we kind of threw around a bunch of names, and every time, Zach was like, Warren G should be on
obviously.
It. And I was like, that'd be cool, but he'd never do it.
Yeah.
And then, so finally, we had taken so long to reach out, and we were like, what, the album's coming out, we have to get a feature. And some, like, my manager knows Warren G's manager or somebody, and, like, asked, and he was like, yeah, I'll do it. He heard the song, and, like, an hour later, he was like, I love it, I'll do it. And I was like, oh my God.
Is that easy?
Yeah, it's that easy. Sometimes. Usually
it's only
not.
That easy when it's a great song from a
great
artist.
Right, right. Well, maybe. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, since you mentioned Beyonce and Britney, like, and Britney. Because you're on the same label as Britney, you met Britney and Beyonce yet, by the way?
Please. Like, I would not be sitting here today with you if I had met Beyonce and or Britney Spears.
Okay.
Probably my top two. Oh, I have like my top three favorite pop artists probably of all time. Like, Beyonce's probably number one. Britney Spears is probably number two. And then like Rihanna and Jennifer Lopez are tied for number three. So
work in the 90s divas, actually. Oh, well, 2000s divas,
yeah,
actually.
Oh, I was raised, born and raised on Jennifer Lopez. Are you kidding me? So if I were to be in the presence of, particularly Jennifer, Britney, and because Rihanna's so cool, I feel like, yeah, I could hang, like I want to hang out with Rihanna. But mm-hmm. but Jennifer and Britney and Beyonce, I'm like, I am not worthy. So no, I have not met any of them. I did sing for Beyonce.
You did?
At the Billboard. I was at the Billboard Women in Music.
Oh,
event.
My goodness.
When I sang the Ariana cover.
Sorry.
For
she's
Ariana,
in the room.
I don't apologize. Beyonce was there.
That's
and so
amazing.
Nobody told me that Beyonce was going to be there on purpose because I would lose my mind. And my MD, who was playing guitar with me, he walked in and he was like, oh, like Beyonce just got here. And I was like, I'm sorry, what did you say? And I see my manager in the back going like, no, stop it. And I was like, Beyonce is here. I'm like in hair and makeup. I'm like in tears. And everyone's like, oh God, oh no, what are we going to do? And I have probably never, I almost blacked out on stage. I still to this day haven't watched the video of me singing it because I was so nervous that I got off stage and I was like, I have no recollection of what just happened. Because I'm sitting on stage and directly in front of me is Ariana Grande, Taylor Swift. Beyonce was in the back. I didn't see Beyonce when I was singing. And I also couldn't look at, because I like didn't want to look around or for fear that I would literally pass out. I don't get nervous very often. And I was shaking coming off stage from that performance.
Wow.
This makes me wonder if you've seen the J-Lo Vegas show yet.
I have. Can I tell you? Let me clue you
Katie
in.
Was there opening night.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. So good.
So Vanessa, who is sitting right here quietly, Vanessa and I went to Vegas to see both Jennifer Lopez and Mariah Carey.
Okay.
I went in kind of with the expectation that I would be, like, a little more excited about Mariah Carey. I don't know why. I was just like, I'm really, like, J-Lo's gonna be fun, but I'm really excited about Mariah. I saw J-Lo first, the first night, and I was gagged, screaming every word. Didn't know I knew every word to every Jennifer Lopez.
Right.
All songs I didn't even know I knew every word. It's the Spanish one, singing in Spanish. I'm like, what is happening to me? I am so taken over by the spirit of Jennifer. And I was seeing Mariah the next night, and I still had the best time, but all I could think about was Jennifer Lopez the whole time. And so I, like, ever since then, I was like, oh, I didn't realize I am the biggest Jennifer Lopez fan.
But it, like, snuck up on you.
So yeah. I want to go back. But because I was sitting, I want to be in the pit.
Mm. Oh, man.
So expensive. The tickets are crazy.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's like something I need to do with my life is to be standing in the pit watching Jennifer Lopez like that close.
It's such a good show.
It is.
It's unreal.
Wild. Yeah. I'm obsessed with her.
Yeah. For good reason.
Ugh.
Well, we could talk forever.
Yes, we could.
But we can't.
Okay.
Because we have to let you go. But folks can check out your new album, The Valley.
Yes, they can.
Go get it now. And Betty, who will be heading out on tour starting April 12th,
oh
so make
God.
Sure to go see her on the road.
It's all happening.
It's all happening. Thank you again so much,
Thank
Betty.
You so
Thank
much.
You.
Thank you again to Betty Hu for dropping by the office. Come by any old time you want. She was just a hoot to talk with, right, Katie?
Yes, and I think that we should just hire her because she might know more about music than we do.
Yeah, I mean, she, as you listen to the interview, she talked about how, like, she was one of those nerdy pop music types where she was like, oh my God, you, like, produced, like, the seventh track on so-and-so's album back in, like, 1990. I'm like, she's one of those pop music nerds, and she's, like, a student of pop music, and so I think it's just, you know, she's just lovely. And now it is time, I think, for our Charts Dead of the Week. 40 years ago this week, Fleetwood Mac's massively successful album, Rumours, hit number one on the Billboard 200 chart. The set reached the top of the list on April 2nd, 1977, and would spend a whopping 31 weeks at number one. That is the longest
run at number one for an album by a group in the chart's history. No one's beat that yet. At least no group has. The 11-song set is just wall-to-wall with now classics like Go Your Own Way, Don't Stop, You Make Love and Fun, and the band's only number one Billboard Hot 100 hit, Dreams. The album went on to sell more than 20 million copies in the U.S., according to the Recording Industry Association of America, and it won the Grammy Award for Album of the Year. Fleetwood Mac would hit the top of the Billboard 200 twice more with 1982's Mirage, and again in 1997 with the live album The Dance. The band last released a full-length studio album way back in 2003 with Say You Will. Will they have a new album soon? I don't know. I think that's still up in the air right now. But you can catch them certainly on tour, probably in the next year or two. They're going to play that Classic West and Classic East festival show this summer. And then they're probably going to mount another tour maybe later on this year or early next year. Stay tuned for more details on that. Will we get a new album from them? I'm crossing my fingers because I really want one. None of that was in the script. I was just running off
Stevie
script there.
Stevie said never say never, right?
Yeah, she did say never say never. I'm going to hold her to that. so we shall see. But anyways, there you have it. 40 years ago this week, Fleetwood Mac topped the Billboard 200 with the phenomenally successful album Rumors. So we've come to the end of the show, Katie. Any parting words? Any final thoughts? Any more? Do we know if Louis or Niall are doing anything this week that might pop into the news next week?
Actually, yes. We did a roundup of One Direction headlines over on Billboard.com, which is what inspired my news this week. And Louis actually went platinum with his song with Steve Aoki. Just Hold On.
Oh, yeah.
And then Niall is in the studio right now. So he's making, working on an album. So all the boys have big news.
Yeah, and weirdly, I failed to mention Louis earlier when I said that all the One Direction guys have dropped, you know, proper solo singles that have been great. I meant to include Louis and Steve because I actually like the Louis and Steve song a whole lot.
Me
so,
too.
So far, they're all doing great. I just had a moment where I just forgot. I had a 1D blank out. I apologize.
Well, I hope our listeners really like One Direction and Drake because they got a lot of it this week.
Yeah, exactly. I know it's really just it's just the Drake and 1D show. It's the one Drake show, really, is what's happening. What song should we go out on, Katie?
Well, you know, when you were talking about Depeche Mode earlier, it made me realize I heard Policy of Truth on my drive in this morning, and what a bomb song that is. So I think that we should go out on Policy of Truth.
Great. Well, we will do that, and we'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.